I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. That the CBC is Canada's largest and most important cultural institution is without question. Whether it's relevant and subsequently useful is something that's always been debated by Canadians, wherever they are on the political spectrum. A new book has put the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation into focus. The Tower of Babel, Sins, Secrets, and Successes Inside the CBC. In a way, this book validates how one feels about the CBC, whether you wish its demise or whether you will its survival. Richard Sturzberg is the book's author. He is the former head of CBC's English services, overseeing television and radio. He was once executive director of Telefilm Canada. He chaired the Canadian Television Fund, was CEO of Star Choice, and was president of the Canadian Cable Television Association. He was in government, too, serving as assistant deputy minister for culture and broadcasting. He was at the CBC from 2004 until 2010. We'll ask him about his experience at the CBC, his successes, and some of the failures. It's a great view onto this institution we either love or loathe. The book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. It's candid and telling. The website for more is at towerofbabel.ca. Please welcome to the Plante Online program in Vancouver today, Richard Sturzberg. Mr. Sturzberg, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So I know authors hate it when I mention other writers, but your dad is Peter Sturzberg, the distinguished historian author.
Yes.
I bought one of his Diefenbaker books over Christmas, and how's he doing, by the way?
He's fine. He's a very old man. He's but he's doing fine. He lives in Vancouver. He lives up in West Van.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, the books on Dief and the Pearson books are just great reading.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he warned you not to work at the CBC. I guess he'd been a foreign correspondent, right?
Well, he was a war correspondent for radio during the Second World War, and then he was the first CBC correspondent in the United Nations in the 1950s.
Yeah, do you think you should have taken his advice?
No. I mean, he was right as a kindness to his son, whom he loved. He didn't want to see me in a bad situation, and that was the right thing for a father to say. But on the other hand, you know, it was an extraordinarily absorbing, interesting, difficult, challenging, fun kind of place to be.
Yeah. So your goal going into it in 2004, I guess the main goal was to get ratings, was to get viewers to watch the CBC, right?
Well, when I got there, just to put it in context, the CBC's audience share had fallen really to the lowest level ever. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty clear that, you know, we had to do something to make sure that the CBC was reconnected back to Canadians and that it was relevant to them and that it mattered to them again. And my own very strong feeling was, and I'm a big admirer of television, that we had to start making shows that, you know, Canadians would really like to watch.
There was talk, and I remember reading this at the time, you know, critics of yours saying that going after an audience meant that quality would suffer.
Yeah, right. Well, I just, first of all, I don't believe that. I think that there's nothing incompatible between making big popular shows and having shows of the highest quality. You know, if you look at all the top shows that are out there, most of those shows are beautiful shows. They're beautifully written, they're beautifully made. You know, so I never understood this. It always seemed to me that it was just turned into essentially an excuse for lousy audiences.
And why do you think going after an audience was a heresy to people that, you know, I guess the institutional people at the CBC?
You know, I think it's because that they had lost audiences for so many years that, number one, they weren't confident that they could make shows that would get big audiences. Same thing was true of the independent producers. And so because they weren't confident they could do that, they had to console themselves, I think, with the thought that, well, maybe they didn't make audiences, but they were good for a different reason. And they were good because they were more demanding or they were higher quality or whatever it was. So I think that this kind of belief that there was a disjunction between popularity and quality became very embedded in the culture. And so when you say, no, that's not right, we're going to try to make some more popular shows, then within the culture of the CBC, that's read as being, well, then we'll have to make low-quality shows. And you say, no, that's not true. We're not going to make low-quality shows. We're going to make great shows, but they're going to be popular. Then everybody says, well, that's not possible. So you run into these kind of terrible kind of self-inflicted
in terms of a formula, what do you think works in terms of getting an audience to watch? I mean, is that drama? Is that reality programming, say? Is that news?
Well, what people watch on TV, what TV is actually about, it doesn't matter whether it's private TV or public TV, it doesn't matter whether it's in Canada or in Britain or in France or in the States. Overwhelmingly, what television is about is it's about entertainment. And it's about comedy, it's about drama, it's about reality shows. That's what it's about. And if you want to get big audiences, then you have to make great entertainment shows. So we set ourselves to do precisely that. We said, let's make great Canadian entertainment shows, shows that are about us, you know, our place in the world, our sense of humor, our sensibility, our history. Let's make those kind of shows. But let's make them within the conventions of television that English Canadians clearly like the best. So let's make them entertainment shows. Let's make series. Let's make situation comedies. Let's make procedurals, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what we did.
And rattle off some of the names. I mean, there was Little Mosque on the Prairie.
Well, Little Mosque on the Prairie is interesting because that was the very first one we made, and this little story in the book, I'm sure perhaps you remember it. That was the very first one we made as part of the new strategy. So now we wanted to make situation comedy. We wanted it to be high concept. We actually started doing pilots and testing them with audiences before we committed to series. And so when we made that one, it was very, very important because, you know, we made a lot of fuss about it. We put enormous amounts of promotion dollars behind it because we knew it was very important to have a hit and to demonstrate to people that this could be done. This was not an impossible undertaking. So actually the very first night it came out, the next day we got the numbers, and I was looking at the numbers and on my BlackBerry. I was in Europe at the time. And the number 210 came up, and I thought, oh my God, it's only made 210,000 viewers, which was just appallingly small number of viewers, way, way less than many of the shows that we'd already shot. But then when I looked again, I thought it made 2.1 million viewers for the first episode, which was, in fact, I think the largest viewership for the launch of any Canadian show ever.
And so what's the average number for a hit, let's say, on some of the private networks? Say American Idol, what does that do?
Oh, American Idol will probably be doing north of 2 million.
Right.
You know, a hit from Canada really is a show that does more than a million viewers. So the only show that the CBC had in the old days was Hockey Night in Canada that would do that. But now they've got a lot. I mean, you know, Republic of Doyle does a million. The Rick Mercer Report does a million. And Change, Dragon's Den sometimes will do over two. Battle of the Blades would be doing over two. Heartland regularly brings in over a million viewers every Sunday night. So there's lots of shows that that now are doing numbers that people previously thought were impossible.
So you've just named some shows that you were involved with bringing to the CBC. Is that where the CBC is going with those shows still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all still you know, mainstays of the schedule. Unfortunately, in the last round of cuts, they've found themselves in a financial problem, so they're not able. They've had to put Battle of the Blades, you know, on hiatus, and I don't know. I think they've had to cut back the number of episodes they're making in some of the other big hit shows.
And do you find that young people are tuning in?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, you know, we were criticized for at the time was we wanted very much to appeal to younger people, not young people. It's not we never had any intention of trying to make shows for teenagers or people in their 20s, but certainly we wanted to make shows for people in their 30s and 40s, as well as for people in their 50s and 60s. And we also wanted to make them, you know, the CBC, when I got there, was skewed very, very male. Partly because it was seen largely as a sort of news and sports operation. We wanted to skew it more female as well. So people, I don't know, for some reason or other, people seem to think it was a bad idea to want to appeal to younger viewers. Well, it's rather lost on that.
Yeah. Now, there are those in this country who believe that the CBC has run its course, that it was at one point relevant, that perhaps that time has passed. There are others who think that it's left-wing or elitist. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
You were fairly high up in the company. When people think that out in the country, it doesn't matter which city in Canada, there are people that think like that. Are they warranted, do you think, in that belief?
Well, I think in the old days they might have been warranted in thinking it was somewhat elitist. I don't think it is anymore. I think that, you know, now the overall strategy is the one that we put in place across the last 6 years is to be much more popular, and you can see that in the numbers. And interestingly, the response of Canadians has been to say, not just in terms of rating numbers, but in terms of polls looking at attitudes towards the CBC, is they find it much much more relevant to them, not surprisingly now, much more distinctively Canadian, much higher quality than they thought in the past. So I think those are all good things. I think if people think it's elitist, they're living, you know, they're thinking about a CBC that's in the past and gone. If they think it's left-wing, again, we did a lot of work to try to broaden out the news coverage to, you know, cover business better and all that sort of stuff. And then I did a big study to look to see whether there was, you know, systemic bias in terms of the way the different political parties were treated, whether we were treating the NDP and the Liberals more favorably than the Tories or whatnot. And one of the interesting things from the study was it showed that to the extent that there was difference in the way in which we treated the parties, we were very marginally more positive towards the Tories than towards the NDP or the Liberals. Nothing to, you know, really note, but it was interesting, and I think it came as something of a surprise to people. So I think if people want to, you know, again, if they're thinking that somehow or another, there's, you know, the place is full of pinkos, well, they're not thinking about the CBC as it is right now. The CBC, I think, as it is right now, is about as fair as they can, you know, as they can be. Recognize this is not science; this is just journalism.
Now, we touched on sort of the institutional challenges that you faced going into the CBC. There were people that resented you from the beginning. They didn't like you. Do you think you should have gotten along better, perhaps, or is that just not part of your nature to compromise, maybe?
Well, it wasn't that so much. I think what's interesting is that, you know, when I first went, there was a certain resentment about somebody coming in from the outside. As far as I can make out, I think it was the first person ever to come from the outside to run English television. People knew that my views were very sort of pro-audience. And that kind of clashed with the internal culture of the place. And then it was compounded by the fact that all the employees were locked out for 2 months, which didn't endear me to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair to say that the first, you know, couple of years were tough. But if you looked at what people thought later on, when the shows were starting to do well, and the relationship with the union was completely repaired and whatnot, then it was interesting. We'd poll the employees, and the employees, you know, were actually quite happy with the new directions. And I think probably not surprisingly, you know, people like to work at a place where things are going well, where, you know, Canadians are talking about how much they like the shows or the new orientations. And, you know, that. And so what we saw in the numbers was that morale in the place improved enormously, and morale was very high. And that people believed that the directions that we were going in were the right directions. And so it had a kind of, you know, narrative that I think it's fair to say that I was quite widely disliked when I was for the first 2 or 3 years I was there. And then towards the end was, you know, quite not widely liked.
Yeah, now there was a guy who headed the news division at the time, Tony Berman.
Mm-hmm.
He left while you were there, but when you came in, he was the head of the news division.
Yep.
He said that you walked into the place with an ignorance about public broadcasting and a contempt for the staff. Why do you think he thinks that?
Well, I can't read Tony's mind. I have no idea why he thinks that. And as far as ignorance of public broadcasting is concerned, I think that the proof is in the pudding. You know, those people who were the most sophisticated about public broadcasting had managed to reduce television viewing of the CBC to its lowest in history. And I might add that with respect to the news department, in 2004 when I got there, if you looked at total viewing to news, to television news by Canadians, in other words, all the viewing to the news shows, CTV, Global, and the CBC, CBC took 12% of that viewing. The other 88% sat over at Global CTV. So again, you know, if knowledge of public broadcasting was a great test, then what those who are most knowledgeable have managed to do is sink the CBC news viewing to its lowest levels as well.
But going into the CBC at the time, I mean, you call it, they call it Fort News.
They called it inside the CBC. Yeah. It was called Fort News.
Yeah, you describe it as a combination of defensiveness and self-regard.
Yeah.
Was it because they were willing to reform themselves or modernize, or were they just insular, perhaps?
Well, I think that it had become very, very insular to the point where, as I mentioned in the book, they didn't spend a lot of time looking at ratings. They didn't spend a lot of time looking at the competition. You know, they had seemed to be in this kind of endless descent that they were incapable of breaking. So it was, you know, it was very, very inward-looking. It was not a place that was, you know, preoccupied with trying to compete in any sense.
And one of the things that I guess you helped bring about was that they actually watched the competitors, right?
Yeah. Well, I thought that's always a good idea to watch what your competitors are doing. And, you know, it's a good idea to see how the audiences are reacting to you. It's a good idea to try to make sure that you're covering the news that actually matters to Canadians. I thought those were all good ideas.
Yeah, there was a move, I guess, in the 90s to do away with local news. That's since come back, and I guess that was something that you championed, right?
That's right. In fact, if you look at what news matters to, I mean, if the general premise is that you want to do a news that in the first instance matters to Canadians who, you know, pay for the CBC, then you should, at the very least, cover the news that matters the most. And two-thirds of all news viewing on television is the local news. So in the first instance, if you want to be relevant, you certainly should have a strong local news presence. The other thing that's interesting is, and we learned this from radio, which is when you're strong locally, you're strong nationally. So that in the places where we had strong local, where we had local radio shows, then typically the listenership to the national shows in that area would double compared to areas where you had no local radio news. So it's very it's that local news is important to Canadians, and indeed the local news strengthens your news more generally.
And radio, at least here in Vancouver and British Columbia, it's done well over the last few years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has done it very well.
Yeah.
It's very good. And, you know, I think it's, the last time I looked, it's probably number two in the market.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's done very well. In fact, radio generally over the course of the last little while has done exceptionally well. Radio's ratings are now the highest in history, the highest in 75 years.
Now, if you had your way, you'd have moved the national to 11, is that correct?
Yeah, probably, if I could have afforded it, because then the question is you have to have enough money to fill the 10 o'clock time slot. But my thought was that would be a good idea, and it would be a good idea for a couple of reasons. One is it would open up room for, you know, more adult kind of drama that you can put on at 10 that you can't put on earlier in the evening. And secondly, I thought that the National would do better at 11 o'clock on the main network, and then for those who still want to see it at 10, that's fine. We put it on the news network, which is practically as fully penetrated as the main service. So I thought that it would be a good idea because we'd be able to do more, as I say, drama and entertainment, but over a kind of more adult thing, and I thought that the national numbers would strengthen as well.
But money wasn't the only issue. There's a great deal of resistance to the idea, right?
Yeah, but not rational. It's not the resistance is from people who don't know anything about television.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because we had a similar thing where we'd moved the Fifth Estate. We moved it from a Wednesday night to Friday night. And everybody moaned and groaned and said, oh, my God, they're putting it in the graveyard of television. Well, the truth of the matter was we also moved it out of one of the most competitive places in, you know, the whole schedule, which is 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights. I mean, it's surrounded by the most expensive and beautiful and competitive American programming. I put it at 9 o'clock on Friday night when the competition was less, and lo and behold, the numbers went up by 200,000 viewers. So, you know, you gotta put the shows in the right kind of places for the shows. You know, people like to watch certain kinds of shows at different times of the evening. So all this stuff about, you know, people say, oh, well, it's a bad idea to move it from 10. You know what? They're simply wrong. And it's like a bunch of moaning from people who don't know a lot about television.
In reading the book, one gets a sense that, well, I don't know if you're trying to get even with some of the people you didn't like, but you certainly are looking for credit that you didn't get, whether it was from within or without the CBC.
Well, you know what? It's not just that. Maybe it has a tone of that, but there's another thing, too, which is that I want the CBC to get some credit for what it did. You know, I think what happened over the course of, and continues to this day, like the last season they had was a great season, and I'd like them to get some credit for having done something, you know, something really great, which is to turn this network around. Because it's clear that, Canadians are saying, hey, we think you're on the right course. We think this is a better course than the course it was on before. I don't know why it is. I mean, one of the things I've been saying to people I think would be really helpful is in terms of this endless debate about whether the CBC should be popular or elitist is for the government just simply to come out and make clear what it wants and say, yeah, you know what we would like? We would like a big popular CBC. Forget this elitist stuff. Or if that's not what they think, then say the opposite. That's okay, too. But just to say something clearly as to what the CBC should really be.
So they should give direction?
On general orientation, absolutely they should, for sure.
Yeah. Are you optimistic about the CBC's future? Like, will it be around 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now?
Well, I the thing that worries me most is the unwillingness to actually be clear about what the role of the CBC is. You can't have a thing that is riddled with contradictions, right? You can't say it's got to be elitist and popular at the same time. It just doesn't work. And so I think that if the CBC is going to survive, it's only going to survive if there's some clarity and some consensus as to what it is that it needs to be. I mean, I think the best thing that could happen is to do what they've done with the BBC, which is the government essentially signs a contract with the BBC, and it specifies in the contract what the BBC is going to do and how it's going to be financed in the contract for 10 years. It's called the Royal Charter and Agreement. At the end of the seventh year, there's big public hearings and parliamentary committees and studies, and then there's further conversations, and then they do it again. And the whole exercise is completely transparent, but it's also completely clear. They say, this is what, in general terms, it's not, the government's not picking shows, but in general terms, this is the orientation we want for the BBC, and we realize it costs this amount of money to do that, so here's the deal. And then the contract is signed, and everybody moves forward. And that, I think, is exactly what we should be doing with the CBC right now.
Now, you're quite candid in the book about people that you don't like. I'm curious, have you heard about what Ivan Fakan, the guy who had CTV, what he thinks about how he's portrayed in this book?
Oh, I don't portray him as somebody I don't like. I portray him, I hope, ironically, as somebody who is very powerful and very clever.
And the word you use, those dreaded. The dreaded.
The dreaded, yes, but he was only dreaded because he was so damn good at what he was doing. He was like a dreaded competitor, right? I hope that people, when you're talking about a competitor, if you describe them as dreaded, would take that as a as a high form of praise indeed. No, I'm a big admirer of Van Fetzen. I think he did an outstanding job. And, you know, he took what was a kind of, you know, really a clapped out collection, a kind of a co-op of, you know, CTV stations and built it into what is the biggest and most and best broadcasting outfit in the country. No, I'm a big admirer of his.
Yeah. But he doesn't come off too well in the book.
Well, I don't know. It's like if you say that you're afraid of your greatest competitor and that, you know, he won most of the rounds against you, I'm not sure if that isn't a form of flattery.
Yeah. Now, when you left in 2010, was that your choice? Or I guess you were fired, right?
No, I was fired.
Yeah. Were you glad to leave it, though?
No, not at all. I wanted to finish what I was doing.
Yeah.
I wanted it like that, you know, there was an opportunity to go even further and to, you know, do even more great shows and to continue to build the news and the radio properties and transform it, as I say in the book, into much more of a content company. No, I had a lot left that I wanted to do.
Do you have a sense of how people at the CBC today, what they think about the book?
Well, I think that my guess is, you know, it's very flattering about a lot of the people. The person who replaced me, Kirsten Stewart, who's terrific. Jennifer McGuire runs the news department, is great. You know, the people who are there, I think, well, they're, you know, obviously I admire them very much. And I think they're treated very, very well in the book. Whether the president is of the same view, I doubt. And the board, I'm sure, is, you know, probably not as happy as they might be with how they're characterized.
The president, Hubert Lacroix, he didn't like you?
Well, he certainly didn't like me enough to keep me around.
Yeah. What do you do now, by the way, other than flogging this book? Do you have a job? Or?
Well, I'm doing some. I have a couple of big clients that I consult to on business strategy problems. And I'm flogging the book and doing some other stuff.
Yeah. It's just an enjoyable book to read. And,
well, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it, Richard.
Okay.
The website for more, towerofbabel.ca. The book is called Tower of Babel, Sins, Secrets, and Successes Inside the CBC. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. Its author, Richard Sturzberg, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.